From the KTO newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. The city of Hoonah has a new chief of police. His hiring comes after the last chief was fired while trying to resign last spring. James Beck of Oklahoma began his role as Hoonah's new chief of police and director of public safety in January. Hoonah, a community of less than 1,000 people, is located on the northeastern side of Chichagof Island, west of Juneau. Beck has served in multiple law enforcement roles for more than two decades, holding positions including tribal police officer, tribal chief of police, and sheriff at different agencies in the lower 48. In an interview, Beck says he took the job because he was looking for a change and was drawn to Hoonah's indigenous culture. Beck is an enrolled tribal member of the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. He says his goal is to build back trust between the community and the police department.
If you're always truthful, you're going to remember what you told somebody. If you go to trying to tell fibs and little white lies and just being dishonest, it's going to come back on you eventually because you're going to spin a web of lies and it always collapses.
Beck's hiring comes after Hoonah's former chief, Carlos Frias, alleged he was fired from his role because he began investigating domestic violence and sexual assault complaints made against some city leaders. He was only in the role for 2 years. However, city leaders rebuffed his claims, saying he was fired for a series of violations, including excessive use of force. Beck says one of his goals as chief is to increase transparency and accountability. Tomorrow, the city of Hoonah is hosting a community meeting at 6:30 p.m. at City Hall for residents to ask questions or make suggestions to him about the police department.
I think these community meetings is for me to put myself in front of the community so that I could increase that transparency because I do believe in transparency in law enforcement.
Beck says he would also like to increase staffing levels at the four-person department and upgrade the station. The community meeting about policing on Thursday is at 6:30 p.m. at Hoonah City Hall. People can also participate online. The Juneau School Board will hold its first reading of the school district's budget tomorrow. In a work session on Saturday, the board directed district administrators to create a list of items that they can discuss adding to the budget. That includes things like additional positions for the district's nursing staff, homeschool program, and support for special education teachers. The discussion comes as the board grapples with a preliminary budget with a more than $5.3 million deficit. That could be addressed by dipping into savings or making cuts. Board members also requested additional grant-funded positions for the Tlingit Culture, Language, and Literacy program to the list. Grant funding for three positions is ending after this school year, and the board has to decide on directly funding them from its operating budget. The board is also considering ways to factor in staffing vacancies and people that don't opt into the district's health insurance plan. Right now, the district budget assumes that it fills all positions and that everyone hired uses the district's health insurance plan. Unspent funds from vacancies and people waiving health insurance currently go into the district's savings. Since at least 2022, the number of district employees opting out of the district's plan has increased. As of this month, more than 22% of them have waived the plan this school year. The board will meet to discuss the budget tomorrow at Thunder Mountain Middle School at 5:30 p.m. And nearly all who testified at a public hearing yesterday afternoon at the state capitol were in favor of a Juneau representative's bill that seeks to ban law enforcement officers from wearing face masks on duty in Alaska. But one person who spoke against the bill happened to be the chief of police for Alaska's largest city. KTOO's Clarice Larson tells us more.
Juneau House Representative Sarah Hannon's House Bill 250 seeks to ban anyone acting as a law enforcement officer in Alaska from wearing a mask while on duty, including federal, state, and local agents, with some exemptions like medical masks, transparent safety shields, cold weather masks, or masks worn by undercover officers. Hannon promotes it as being pro-law enforcement. She pre-filed the bill in January following public outrage when a masked Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer shot and killed a Minnesota woman on camera. A U.S. Customs and Border Patrol officer killed another man in Minneapolis just weeks later. At the bill's second hearing in the House State Affairs Committee on Tuesday afternoon, the bill received a lot of support from the 9 public testifiers. That's after a chilly initial reception from a couple of legislators. Bridget Smith of Juneau said while she respects law enforcement, she doesn't respect anyone who hides their identity.
A peace officer wearing a mask to conceal his face would immediately lead me to question that person's motives and distrust whether that officer was really there to protect and serve me or whether they wish to be unaccountable for their behavior.
As the bill is currently written, an officer who violates the ban would be charged with a Class B misdemeanor per violation, which is punishable by up to 90 days in jail and a $2,000 fine. Some testifiers asked for the charges to be harsher. Laura Lucas, also from Juneau, said she supported the bill because she believes it could prevent what's currently happening in Minnesota from happening in Alaska in the future. Other states across the U.S. have sought to impose similar bans in recent months.
Within the past year, we've seen changes in this country that we've never imagined would happen before. So I see this legislation as potentially proactive for an issue that might arise in Alaska.
The main dissent against the bill came from Anchorage Police Chief Sean Case. He said while he opposes police officers wearing masks to conceal their identity, he argued the bill is trying to address a problem that doesn't exist in Alaska.
Masking is not a practice in Alaska. Enforcing this bill would be impractical, giving it numerous exemptions. It attempts to solve a non-existent issue while inserting local law enforcement into a debate about federal immigration enforcement, something outside our role and responsibility.
He said the Anchorage Police Department already has other accountability measures in place, like requiring uniformed officers to wear their badges and identify themselves upon request.
Despite real risks of harassment and violence, officers have continued to serve openly with visible name tags and badges. That visibility is part of our responsibility to protect and serve our communities.
While Case was the only one to verbally testify against the bill, the committee has received written testimony as well. A couple of comments against, but most are in favor. Hannon's bill is slated to be heard again by the House State Affairs Committee and has been referred to the House Judiciary Committee. But it's unclear if it will have enough support to advance in the legislature. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And the U.S. Forest Service officially kicked off its public process for the Tongass National Forest Plan revision on Wednesday with an initial 30-day public comment period intended to guide a draft plan and environmental review. The Tongass National Forest is the largest national forest in the U.S. with more than 16 million acres covering 80% of coastal Southeast Alaska, including more than 1,000 islands. The last forest management plan was completed in 2016. That plan phased down the amount of old growth available for logging over several years. The revised plan will set the stage for how the agency intends to manage the forest over the next 10 to 15 years. In its public notice released Tuesday, the agency outlined six proposed goals for its updated plan. First, make it more concise and simplify land use designations. Second, prioritize economic uses of the forest for timber, mining, tourism, and recreation. Third, address the rise in cruise ship visitors. Fourth, include collaboration between different groups. Fifth, consider subsistence hunting, fishing, and gathering needs. And sixth, consider indigenous knowledge. The public notice said the agency will ensure the plan is consistent with two of President Trump's executive orders aimed at maximizing mineral extraction and logging in the Tongass. The public comment period for the scoping phase ends on March 19th. Find this story on ktol.org for the link to submit a comment. And travelers can now schedule ferry rides with the Alaska Marine Highway for May through September. That's after the summer schedule opened for booking last week. The schedule looks a lot like recent years, with six of the state's nine vessels sailing. There's not enough funding or staffing to run them all, says Shannon McCarthy. She's a spokesperson for the State Department of Transportation.
Our crew is relatively stable right now, but you know, it's not expanding rapidly. But our budget is also a concern this year, so we will only be running one of the mainliners at any given time.
Only one mainliner, the Columbia, is scheduled to travel weekly through Southeast to Bellingham, Washington. That means a round trip every 2 weeks for most residents. McCarthy says the Kennecott will be on standby in case the Columbia needs repairs.
The nice thing is it is much better to have two, you know, vessels, mainliners, that are, you know, able to be sailed at any point.
The Tustamina will sail the southwest region between Homer and the Aleutians. That's roughly two round trips per week from Homer to Kodiak and one full Aleutian chain run per month. The Daybolt Leconte will sail Prince William Sound, and Lynn Canal will be similar to last year, with the Hubbard doing nearly daily runs between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski helped secure hundreds of millions in federal ferry funds over the last 5 years, but the state is now waiting on a key federal grant for this year. DOT Commissioner Ryan Anderson is scheduled to be in D.C. this week to talk to the Alaska delegation about it.
Because this money is still available, it was written into the law, so we're just trying to figure that out to see if there is some relief there.
With ongoing funding issues, the state is considering selling the Matanuska, a 63-year-old mainliner that's been tied up in Ketchikan and used for housing new ferry workers. McCarthy says they'll still be able to offer housing in the mainliner that's not currently sailing. The first round of fundraising reports in the 2026 governor's race is out, shedding some light on a crowded field. Candidates raised more than $4.3 million by the beginning of February, according to the first batch of campaign finance reports in the race. Anchorage podiatrist and Republican Matt Halala accounts for more than a quarter of that. Halala contributed nearly $1.3 million to his own campaign, accounting for more than 94% of his total. He says self-funding his campaign means he can turn down contributions from donors or groups that don't jive with his values.
I'm not in desperate need of big money from big influential donors. There's a quid pro quo, and that's a major problem. Not to say I'm not going to take money from some big donors as we keep going, but I'm going to be able to be very, very selective.
Former Attorney General Craig Taylor is another Republican candidate relying on self-funding to an extent. He's the number two fundraiser in the race so far, with nearly $900,000 in total contributions. About a third of that comes from Taylor himself. Former State Revenue Commissioner Adam Crum is in third with roughly $350,000 in contributions. Tom Bekich was the top Democratic fundraiser in this round of reports. The former state senator has also taken in roughly $350,000 from a wide range of donors. He says fundraising really ramped up when Mary Peltola announced she'd be running for U.S. Senate rather than for governor. And he says he's proud of the fact that funding for his campaign has come almost exclusively from Alaskans.
Buying your way to the governorship is just not, I just don't think that's good for Alaska. And what I want to see is people reaching out to regular donors, getting people who are regular Alaskans engaged and involved in their campaign, and that's certainly what I'm doing.
Another Democrat in the race, former State Representative Jonathan Kreis-Tompkins, didn't join the race until after reporting period had ended, but he's raised $750,000 in his first 2 weeks in the race, according to his campaign. That's more than twice as much as Bekich. This is KTOO.